right. How well do you know the person sitting next to you?
Hey, at least you didn't ask me how much do you like the person.
No.
No. I like it.
But if they told you they had done something real spectacular in the past, would it shock you? Or if they had a unique talent that you'd never seen, would you feel any different about them or think, wow, she's pretty talented? Or he's pretty talented.
No, nobody's got a unique talent.
And nobody would say, well, why didn't you tell me you could do that?
Absolutely.
Should we feel like that Jesus is any better than us? Does he want us to? Does he want us to feel that way?
Now, when he was here, he wanted to fit. He wanted to be like us, mm-hmm. so we would see. He saw the human side of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis, which was, you know, unless you experience it, you can't tell somebody that you know how it is.
Because today's lesson, it's going to bring out and show where Peter, they go to the mountaintop, we'll get into all this, but Peter kind of gets a little confused and he places Jesus on the same level with Moses and Elijah. But we know that Jesus is the Son of God. Because if you think about it, were the disciples and following Jesus any different than us or had any different desires than we have? I mean, should we, well, this writer brings it out. The disciples were no different from us in their desire to be the most important or the best. Because we'll skip over into Matthew 18. It kind of surmises what Jesus is talking about, and it's always been brought out that the person or the people who exhibit a childlike faith will be truly great, will gather the kingdom of heaven. So, does that mean we have to act like kids? Or is it that our heart should be like a child, just as innocent and as humble as they can be, grasping for knowledge, reaching out, wanting to learn, wanting to help people? But what happens to us as we get older? Why does that go away from us?
You get kind of cynical.
Yeah.
And you do things for people with the faith, the childlike faith, and it kind of sometimes comes back in your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you use your time or your money and your talents to help people, and it doesn't end up like, I'm not saying it should, but it doesn't end up like you anticipating it ended up. And you get hurt, and we get hard. Your heart gets hard because we get weary. You get tired of trying. And we've talked about this before. You get tired of doing what's right and following the scriptures. And then the person sitting next to you still seems to have the better life. They don't struggle like you do with your finances or your family. And mm-hmm. how come that person has it all and I'm still struggling? So I think we get hard. I think we see the world gets hard and we get hard with it.
Mm-hmm. But like the parable of the one lost sheep. If you were a shepherd and you just had one missing, would you just move on with the others?
Oh. In this day and age, you know how much that costs?
Because that tells us the importance that God places on each individual. Doesn't care that this side of the room is the most important and y'all can just wander away and be all right. Because after last week's lesson, it tells us in starting in chapter 17 that after 6 days, Jesus took Peter and James and John, who was the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And there he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. And at that moment appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Now, first off, if you were on that mountaintop and all of a sudden Jesus just started glowing, what would you do?
Be afraid?
Would you think, gosh, he's brought us up here and it's the end of us? He's fixing to really lower the boom on us? But why do you think that Moses and Elijah suddenly appeared? Because, you know, like last week, someone brought out that some people have confused that Elijah was confused being as Jesus. But we know that Moses was the lawgiver and Elijah was the foremost prophet in the times. And I didn't realize this until I read it, that Elijah, when he was transcended into heaven, he didn't die. He was just taken up. Now, was there a specific reason for that? Why didn't God just leave him here on earth until his time was done? Why did he take him home in full body like he took Jesus?
That in there too?
No. I don't know.
But don't you think that Moses and Elijah was mentioned because through their whole journey in the Old Testament, through all the books and all the journey in that Moses went through and then what Elijah went through, It tells us through all their adventures, I guess you could say, there was something telling about the Messiah, that there would be a coming Messiah, that there would be somebody down the road to fulfill all these things they've been telling us.
Well, Elijah did come back, but he didn't come back as Elijah. He came back in the form of John, but nobody believed him when he was here. Nobody would listen to him. Did they know who Elijah was prior to him being ascended into heaven? But I guess what you're saying is, do we get confused sometimes that the preacher is the only one I can listen to teaching the Word of God? But what if his form was in the pulpit one day, but it was somebody else speaking? And I'll just use this, that was a very loose person, and you didn't know it. And you heard the word, would you still accept it from that person representing the preacher that day? Or would you gather that something's going on, and I don't want to listen?
It's kind of like you said, a child on the faith. Like, it's like a child when you tell them not to do something, and then I tell them to do something that doesn't reflect what you told them. The child will tell you, that's not what my mama said. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, that's not what Jesus said.
Mm-hmm. Because the conversation between Jesus and Moses and Elijah, what did it center upon? Because it tells us, or the writer points out, that maybe Jesus is talking to them about his crucifixion and the things that are going to happen. Because even in Luke chapter 9, verse 31, back up before that, it says, two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring fulfillment at Jerusalem. Was he talking to them about how when I'm crucified on the cross that your work is going to be completed too? Or this is what's going to happen to me and you're to continue spreading the gospel. But Peter, when I thought this was kind of interesting, would you be like Peter and just, I'll say this nicely, you know, there's always someone who's just going to say something before they think.
Oh, I wonder if he's talking.
Mm-hmm. Because verse 4, you know, there. I mean, if I was Peter and I'm standing there and I see this going on, well, Lord, it's good for us to be here. Well, Jesus might not have thought that way. I want you here for a purpose, but Peter, I didn't bring you for that purpose. But Peter just, I'm proud. It's good for us to be here.
You know, I go back to Peter, and I get a lot of comfort from him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't think about it, he just says it. But then, who did Jesus, he said he was the rock.
Yeah.
On this rock I will build my church.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have a lot of faith in that. Just because we speak and say the wrong things and don't think about it, we're still loved.
It's kind of like now, though. Every group usually has a leader or somebody there's somebody that's timid in the group, but they talk about something that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter would be the one. So it'd be kind of like, you know. So it's sort of like today. People are going to talk among themselves, but there's usually only one person that's really brave enough to question somebody.
Yeah, because, I mean, Peter, speaking out, did he really understand why he was there? Or did he really not see the significance of what Jesus was trying to teach? Or what he was seeing? You know, because, I mean, I would be like Peter if I was there and all of a sudden Jesus just started glowing, and his face shone, and his clothes, and it's the bright light, I'd be a little skeptical, what's happening. But Peter goes a little further, and he sort of places Jesus and Moses and Elijah on the same place, and Lord, I'll build a shelter for each one of you. Well, that's putting Jesus on the same plane. You know, do we sometimes... And I take that to say, or think sometimes, do we sometimes place our spiritual leaders on a pedestal too high, when really and truly all they want to be is like us? They're human beings. They are called by God to do their work, but if they're out there for the fame and the glory, then to me that takes them down instead of putting them up.
Well, and we know too that if this is kind of cynical, but they are chosen. They are men of God and women of God that do specific teaching. When you think about it, when you were selected to, when he put place in your heart to be a minister or a missionary, and all of a sudden you turn perfect because, you know, he made you perfect. So now you don't do anything but what's right. Look at all the people that would want to jump on the board to be a minister or, you know, a missionary because now my life is perfect, which, you know, I think people forget too, ministers and people in the ministry, they struggle with things just like we do
mm-hmm.
today. Just as hard as we do.
Mm-hmm. But there again, even in today's world, and I asked this earlier, but do we try to take Jesus and make him equal with us and everybody else instead of recognizing who he is, the Son of God, and he really should be up, he should be above us. We should be trying to achieve what he wants us to achieve, but instead of bringing him down. But then a little intervention takes place. Before Peter can speak, this loud voice comes out and says, "This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Now, would that shock you if all of a sudden a big audible voice? Just, I mean, what if we're in worship today and something like that happens? What would you do? Would you get up and run? Would you sit in your chair and shake? Or
after y'all pick yourself up off the floor.
Because how do we do it? How do we expect God to present himself to us? Do we want to see him in an image? Do we want to hear his voice? Do we want to know what he really looks like, how he dresses, what he eats? Or do we just accept it that God is God?
We accept God as God.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because at that moment, when this happens, well, the writer points out, let's get back that the statement that was said is that Jesus was God's beloved. That is true. Second, he was pleased with his Son. He let it be known. With him I'm well pleased. But then he ordered the disciples, you need to listen to him. But why did he, you know, listening to him, why didn't he say, you need to listen to me? Now, gets back to Jesus and God being one and the same. But if you're listening to me, you're also listening to him as well. Well, if I was like Peter, and I'm sure James and John did too, I'd fall down to the ground. I'd be shocked. But then Jesus came back to them and touched them and told them, don't be afraid. Get up. All right? You know Jesus has passed, so you know I'm down and I'm scared, but you know in the past he's performed miracles by going and touching someone. Would it kind of make you feel, I've been selected? He came and he touched me. How many people did Jesus really touch in his lifetime? Was he like us? Sunday mornings we hug and we shake hands. Did Jesus do that as a whole? When he went into a city, and I'm not going to place him like the president with the Secret Service agents, but did he go in demanding attention? He didn't want that. But did he go through the city in and out of the people and just touching everyone? Or was he select in who he touched? Did he touch someone because he knew they needed that? But if the other disciples had been present or even close by, how do you think they would have felt also? But, I mean, we get to the part where when Jesus tells them to get up and don't be afraid. But then when you look up and Moses and Elijah are gone, now, where did they go? Were they just the spirit? And they disappeared? Was I dreaming this? Did I really see him or did I not see him? Because think about the wonders of the world today. Do you actually believe, like, there's this, I'll just make up something, there's this place or this mountaintop somewhere where there's a cross and people flock to it to see it? Would you believe that by just reading it and seeing a picture? Or would you only believe it if you went and saw it? Mm-hmm. Because Jesus' plan in this, when he tells them not to be afraid and you get up and everything else has transpired, wouldn't you want to leave and go tell somebody what you had just experienced, what you had just seen? But in verse 9, it says, as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, don't tell anyone about the vision until the Son of Man is raised from the dead. And the disciples asked, why then do the scribes say that Elijah must come first? Well, if we go on and read, and if you go back in the book of Malachi, if I can find this real quick. Nope. Well, I've lost it. Here we go. Malachi chapter 3, verse 1, where it says, see, I will send my messenger who will prepare the way before me. Now, the Old Testament, the prophecy, they're speaking about this already. And it goes on to say, then suddenly, Lord, you are seeking, the Lord you are seeking will come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant whom you desire will come, says the Lord Almighty. Now, talking about Elijah, Jesus in verses 11 through 13 tells them, to be sure, Elijah will come and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come. And they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. He says, in the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. And at that point, it says, the disciples understood what he was talking to them about John the Baptist. Was it a test or was it a trial that Elijah came back, like we mentioned earlier, but not in the, say, the form of Elijah, but he put him back as John the Baptist? Why wouldn't the people accept the teachings from John the Baptist and not Elijah? Is it kind of our world today? We study and we read what's going to happen. We're waiting for the Son of God to come back. Is there somebody in our midst who Jesus has specifically placed here to teach us that, but we don't accept it? I'm not going to believe it until I see it. Well, Peter had a glimpse of the power of what could happen. But do we understand, or do people just, even in those days, I've heard of Jesus, I've heard of his teachings, I've never seen him, but now you're telling me that he's fixing to suffer at the hands of men? Why? Why should he suffer?
He wanted to prove or show people that he was human. I mean, because if he was like a vision, you know, like, I mean, we laugh about ghosts, but if he was in that form, he wouldn't suffer because there's nothing there. It's just air or vision or, mm-hmm. you know. Whereas he was a real man. He was a real person. He was somebody, like, you don't know how much, but, I mean, I'm sure he hugged his mother. I mean, so she hugged a real person. She didn't hug a vision.
Mm-hmm.
She held a real person in her arms. So, you know, it's kind of like we see on TV, like walking through walls as a ghost. Well, if he had come back just as a vision thing, he wouldn't have had to travel because he could have just said, well, I'm going to be in Birmingham right now. And all of a sudden, he would be there. But he was like us. And we suffered, and you know those people a long time ago suffered because they stoned, the Bible tells us, they stoned people, they crucified people, and he was only treated just like, I mean, you know, the repercussions of being a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But do you really think that this, I won't say episode of this teaching, sat in the disciples' minds? We've been told that he's going to die. He's been telling us all along that this is going to happen to him. But then all of a sudden, three of us get to see a vision. We get to experience something supernatural. And we see two prophets from the past in life form, but then all of a sudden they're gone too. Should we?
That would be not to tell somebody. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. what I keep thinking. Mm-hmm. The excitement of seeing that and just, you know, the overwhelming and then being told going down the mountain, by the way, don't tell anybody about this, and you think, I mean, just the excitement of knowing that what I really believe is really true. But then you can't tell nobody. That would just be kind of, you know? And I know there was the reason, and I know he, it's just like in our lives today. Things happen for a reason. He's there. He places people in our lives. He does things like this.
Well.
But just to be able, I mean, like, whoa, y'all, let me tell you what happened. Y'all are not going to believe.
But he put an
after his death.
Yes. It's
the moment right there.
That's why the excitement right then. Wait till I get to the foot of the mountain because I'm going to tell these people. And then he says,
but if you think about if Jesus had been a proud person and wanting to boast, he would tell them the other thing. Go tell everybody.
That's what I keep thinking.
Mm-hmm. This Jesus has told me that y'all are going to crucify him. And you look at him like, who are you?
Man, y'all should have been on the mountain when they had this vision and this cloud, and you wouldn't believe who I saw.
Well, if
it, right. We don't believe
it. If it was in today's world and I went out and telling y'all, President Trump has told me that he's going to die and he's going to do this, y'all would just look at me like, mm-hmm. Let's call the authorities. Let's bring him. We've got a crazy person going on. Mm-hmm. But the writer closes out here. He has one point. He, by telling them not to do that, I mean, in a way, he is preparing the way, but you wonder, like I said, why didn't he tell them? Go ahead and prepare the way. Tell everybody. But reverence and fear, are they important to us to understand the reality of God's love? If you had no fear of it, which we're not supposed to be fearful of God's teachings, God's love, but what if we didn't have any reverence about it? Take this and, you know, you can tell me all you want to tell me, but I'm not going to listen to you until I see it. But I'll ask this question. Would you want to be present at the moment that Jesus comes back. But your curiosity wants you to be there to see it. Or let's just live our lives following His teachings, doing His works, loving people, and if it happens, and I'm here, okay. If not, I know that I'm still going to be taken with Him.
But the human curiosity, you know, kills cats. Well, yeah, you want to see it. I want to see it like in living color. But as a Christian, knowing the main thing is just I need to be ready. If He comes right this minute, I just need to be ready in my heart. You know, I need to know. But the Scriptures have told me and prepared to be ready to meet Him regardless. And you know that.
Well, is there going to be, I thought about this a whole lot, is there going to be even just a split second that we know, here He is, we're going to feel that we know, that are we going to have time to worry about family members that we may know? I mean, is that just kind of...
And, you know, I guess, too, as a human, you read and you studied about Him all these years, you do want to see Him.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
you
are going to see.
Am I going to be the? Is it going? I'm going to be the first one to see Him when it happens. Well, you know, that's just. But I mean, the human part of it is, you do want to see.
Him. Yeah, that's our goal.
Yeah, and I mean, in this scripture talks about too. I think it's the overwhelming feeling you'll have if you see Him, and it's. It's like the scriptures talk about, like how they look, you know, around His face. I mean, it's just like, you know. But the scriptures say, it just says like, and His face shone like sun, and His clothes became as white as the light. To me, that would just be breathtaking. Just something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just.
Because off the subject, back. And I'll turn this off. We won't report.